This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court of Canada struck down Canada's security certificate law. Security certificates allowed non-citizen permanent residents and refugee claimants to be arrested and detained indefinitely without trial. But the court also gave Parliament a year to rewrite the security certificate legislation. Mahmoud Jabala and Hassan Almery, arrested and detained under security certificates, remain in a special holding facility in Millhaven Penitentiary. The men have been on strike for more than 90 days, protesting the conditions of their detention. A third hunger striker, Mohamed Majoub, was recently granted bail, but the terms of his release are not finalised. Matthew Behrens is with the Campaign to End Secret Trials, and he's joined me on the line from Toronto. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
So what's your response to yesterday's decision by the Supreme Court?
Well, we think it's a very good decision. There were a lot of really strong points that were made by Chief Justice McLaughlin, who wrote the decision. It's a unanimous decision, and essentially it says that the two key parts of the security certificate process, the first part being the determination of whether or not the certificate is reasonable, and the other parts with respect to detention and the potential to apply for release on bail, do not meet the requirements of fundamental justice. They do not minimally impair people's charter of rights and freedoms, and therefore they've been struck. They've been found to be of no force and effect. And we think that's a tremendous victory, given all the fear and the hysteria that's been blown up around these cases over the last 6.5 years.
Well, congratulations. I'm sure that's on a small part due to the activities of your group. Mahmoud Jabala and Hassan Almery and Mohamed Majoub have now been on hunger strike for more than 3 months. What's their condition?
Well, they're not in great shape, and Mr. Majoub is also on hunger strike again. They're protesting their conditions of detention, a wide variety of complaints and problems that have arisen at the facility where they're currently being held. It's been dubbed Guantanamo North because, in many respects, it represents the same problem that is faced by the hundreds of people who are held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. These are folks who are facing indefinite detention. Until recently, in Mr. Majoub's case, he did not know if or when he would get out. And when he does get out, he's still going to be under very draconian conditions, conditions which include house arrest, wearing a tracking bracelet, his phone is going to be tapped, his mail will be open, and he has to apply for approval 48 hours in advance to go outside for 4 hours, and that has to be approved by the government. In the case of Mohamed Harkat, for example, yesterday he lives in Ottawa, but he was denied permission to go to the Supreme Court to hear the results of the case that involved him. So it just gives you a sense of the fact that even though we are beginning to see a movement towards release on conditions, those conditions are very harsh. And again, this is all for people who've never been charged with, much less convicted, of any offense in Canada.
Yes, as you say, but now since the court has given Parliament a year to rewrite this security certificate law, the men will maybe remain in detention. And as you mentioned, Mr. Majoub was recently granted bail and the other two have been released under very, very strict but forms of house arrest. What's the likelihood that we'll see some sort of similar agreement for the men who currently remain in Millhaven?
Well, Mr. Jabala, first of all, Mr. Majoub is still in Millhaven and will likely be there for a couple of weeks because the Border Services people have to set up the phone taps and the other forms of surveillance that will be at his home with his family. Mr. Jabala recently completed an application for bail, and it's our sincere hope that he will be granted that bail soon, and that would leave Hassan Almery. And we're hoping that, given the Supreme Court's very strong position with respect to detention and indefinite detention, that a bail application will be looked upon more favorably by the courts in the one-year interim. In the meantime, as you say, the Supreme Court has given Parliament 1 year to rewrite the legislation, and what we will be looking for is no rewrite whatsoever. We want complete repeal of the certificate process, and to say if the government has any concerns that with respect to the security of the country, with respect to any individual, those individuals should be charged under the criminal code and be allowed to see the evidence against them and be given a fair trial process, because otherwise you're just prettying up a process which has already been found to be fundamentally flawed and unfair.
Security certificates have been issued at the request of CSIS, Canada's spy agency. The Canadian Border Services website describes the process of issuing a security certificate as a carefully considered and rigorous process. How considered and rigorous has CSIS been in its investigations?
Well, not rigorous at all. As a journalist, I would hope that when you go to cover a press conference, you bring a pen and paper or a tape recorder so you can get down exactly what's being said. When CSIS interviews individuals before they are issued security certificates, they'll show up to your house at any time of the day or night, often without a translator. They do not take verbatim notes, and they do not tape record phone conversations. They do up a brief summary a couple of hours later at the office, and that becomes the basis for some of the evidence and the theories against these men that CSIS is developing. When you get the public information, Stockwell Day consistently says, oh, there's tons of information, and the lawyers get to see it all. It's unclear to me whether or not he's actually seen any of what is presented in court, because what it is you get reams of documents, which are pretty much articles from the National Post, from CNN, from right-wing journals and think tanks, and these are all things that support CSIS's theory about an individual, but which do not name that individual themselves. And it's on the basis of this that the judge looks at that big pile of stuff and thinks, wow, they've really done their homework, when in fact they haven't done any work at all. Some of the CSIS agents that are brought forward in court have been asked questions such as, have you read the 9/11 Commission report on intelligence failures in the United States? And the chief of counterterrorism said in court, no, I haven't. And the question was, well, why not? Well, I'm a busy guy and I haven't had time. So they're so busy racially profiling individuals and throwing them behind bars under this ridiculous process that they're not actually doing the real work of saying, if there is a threat out there, we'll know how to counter it, because we're actually looking at information like what came out of the 9/11 Commission.
That's quite extraordinary. Despite ruling that security certificates violate the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the court, quote, upheld the principle behind security certificates. They suggested that a new certificate law include a provision for a special advocate for the accused. How far would this go in making the security certificate fair?
You can't make a security certificate fair because it's based on secrecy. And I think it's really crucial that people not buy into this idea of window dressing and having a special advocate, because the individual who is the focus of the security certificate is still at a loss as to why he or she is being held. And if you have a special advocate, you can talk to the special advocate, but what are you going to talk about if you don't know what the basis of the case is? When the special advocate goes behind closed doors and tries to challenge the evidence, let's say the special advocate hears about a phone tap. Well, you can't go back and talk to the detainee about that phone tap because you have to swear an oath of secrecy. Ian MacDonald, a Queen's Counsel in the United Kingdom who used to be a special advocate, resigned because he said, ultimately, you're contributing to an unfair and unjust process, and you're just legitimizing that process. His recommendation, as is ours, is that the criminal code has more than enough provisions to deal with any potential security risk. Let's use the criminal code, problematic as it may be in some instances, because it does provide not only the procedural safeguards and protections that the detainee needs, it also requires of the government that it actually have a case that can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The problem with security certificates is that's not the standard. They use the lowest standard of proof in any court in Canada, which is reasonable grounds to believe that something is possible. That's a far cry from the criminal law standard, and that's why so many of these things have been upheld.
Now, you mentioned England. There also, in Britain, the Law Lords struck down their comparable sort of legislation, but then went ahead to replace it with something similar, but based on house arrest. How does the situation there compare with here?
Well, it's our concern that the Commonwealth countries are looking at one another to say, where are you going with this stuff, before they have the courage to actually come out and do something. And in Britain, the use of control orders is very problematic, because it's very similar to the house arrest that we're seeing in Mr. Harkat's case and in Mr. Majoub's case. And all we're really doing is changing the location of the detention, but we're not actually getting to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is government security agencies are scapegoating people who do not have an opportunity to respond to the reasons for that scapegoating and for the detention. So, you know, it's nice that the individuals who have been detained for as long as 7 years in Canada hopefully will be soon home with their families, but it basically turns their families into their jailer and places the whole family under house arrest. Imagine being a 7-year-old kid and your dad has an electronic tracking bracelet strapped to him, and CSIS, the RCMP police, can enter your house at any time, day or night, 24 hours a day, without a warrant if they want to search your place. That basically reinvigorates the sense of terror that these families have been going through, and the whole community has been going through for many, many years.
So there are many organizations and human rights and prominent Canadians that have supported the campaign against secret trials and security certificates. Where does the campaign against secret trials go from here?
Well, I think the next step really is to remind people that although the Supreme Court has come down with a very good and strong ruling, it doesn't end there. We still have men who are going through a lot of difficulties, both at Guantanamo North and on the very strict bail conditions. The men are also fighting deportation to torture. In one of the cases of Mr. Jabala last October, a federal court judge ruled that he could not be deported to Egypt or to any other country where he would face torture or any form of cruel and unusual punishment. The federal government has appealed that decision, so they're still trying to deport him and the other men to torture. So that's another legal stream which will eventually make its way up to the Supreme Court, and so there's a lot of work to do around that to remind the Canadian government that we have legal obligations never to deport someone to torture. We also want to be challenging the kinds of draconian release conditions that are being imposed. And finally, we have to educate parliamentarians, just as we did on the issue of secret trials, on how there's something in this country called the criminal code which can be used. Right now we have two tiers of justice in this country, one for immigrants and refugees and one for citizens. And what we have said all along is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms applies equally to everyone in this country. All people in this country deserve equal treatment before the law. And that's the only way, really, that we're going to solve this thing. We can't go back and have nicer legislation with special advocates or different kinds of models, because you're basically saying two tiers of justice, and that way is very a dangerous direction.
It's great that you're saying that human rights should exist irrespective of citizenship. Like, how can people support your campaign?
Well, I think they need to get involved first off by just getting some education and background on the issue. So definitely go to our website, which is www.homesnotbombs.ca, and click on the secret trials icon. Also get involved with local groups such as No One Is Illegal in Vancouver, who have done a terrific job at holding demonstrations and educational events and being very supportive of the campaign's goals of abolition of the security certificate and ending deportations to torture. Public exposure is the key in these cases, and I think if people commit themselves to writing to their MPs, to writing to the detainees, and just staying involved at whatever level they can until this is over, that will make a huge difference, as it has, we've seen, in the past 6 years.
Well, congratulations, and thanks very much for speaking with me.
And thanks to all your listeners who I know have been very active in this campaign.
I've been speaking with Matthew Behrens. He's with the Campaign to Stop Secret Trials in Canada, and he was on the line from his home in Toronto.